They tried to stop my shine, but I said, hold up. Y'all know how many hoes done tried to hold this hoe up.
Tokyo
Talk
boy.
The music. Sometimes I rhyme slow, sometimes I rhyme quick. Sometimes I'm nice, sometimes I'm not having it. Sometimes I rock steady, sometimes I mix it up. But I always stay crack and I don't give up. What's up? Hey y'all. Hey y'all. Been a while, but I'm back. Been a while, but I'm back. How's everybody this week? I hope everybody is doing very well. Welcome to Craig's Pop Life, a black gay excursion into pop culture. I am your host, Craig Seymour. You know me. I've been writing about pop culture for more than 20 years now, some of which I'll be talking about today. You can read some of my music writing at rnbeing.com. I'm also an author who has written a number of books. You got the biography, Luther, The Life and Longing of Luther Vandross. You got my memoir about being a grad school stripper hoe. All I Could Bear, My Life in the Strip Clubs of Gay Washington, D.C. You got my novel about three generations of black gay men looking for love, Who's Your Daddy? And you have my forthcoming special, The Life and Art of Janet Jackson, which is why the podcasts have been a little more sporadic lately, because I'm in the finishing stages of that, and it's kind of, it's harder and harder to take breaks from it. But anyway, I have a website where you can find links for some of the stuff that I talk about on the show. It's easy to remember. It's craigspoplife.com. So welcome to a very special episode of Craig's Pop Life. As many of you all know, if you follow me on social media, and if you don't, why not? At Craig's Pop Life. On all platforms, except Facebook, but don't follow me on Facebook anyway, because I'm never on it. But anyway, a couple of months ago, I posted a picture of a cassette of a Lauryn Hill interview that I did back in November 1998. And this was at the height of the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill era. And I was writing a story for Spin Magazine, which had just, very justly, named her as Artist of the Year. So anyway, I literally had not listened to this tape for 20 years. Mostly because I really wasn't pleased with the article I wrote. It was like one of my first big, it was the first big celebrity interview that I ever did. It was before Mariah, before Janet, and I'd really only been writing music reviews. So Spin gave me this big chance, and I just felt like at the end of the day, I didn't really have the skills to pull it together in the way I would have liked to. So I was kind of disappointed in it. But you know, that's all part of the journey of being a writer, and I'm grateful that I just had the chance when I was in the game, you know, I'm grateful to all the people that gave me opportunity just to learn while getting that check. And I'm very grateful that I was working in a time when there were a lot of opportunities because there were a lot of paying media outlets. You know, there are lots of media outlets now, but they're not always paying media outlets. So anyway, I had put this tape of Lauryn interview aside, largely because I didn't like the story, you know, so I wasn't really, I guess I was kind of feeling like the story was sort of reflective of the interview. But I guess starting last year with the 20th anniversary of the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, I began just thinking about the historical significance of the interview in terms of when it was done and in terms of where she took her career since then, you know, kind of turning her back on celebrity and mainstream success. I'll let you be the judge of whether or not you can see any hints of what's to come in or hear any hints of what's to come in the interview. But here are just some things just to give you some context for what you're about to listen to. Okay, so the interview took place the day before she was scheduled to give birth to her daughter, Sela, who is now a model. I don't know if she actually gave birth that next day or not, but it was definitely, but she was, you know, that's when she was due. And we touch on a lot of opportunities because it was so controversial that she was pregnant again because, you know, she'd already had Zion. And, of course, you know, the anthemic song about having a baby despite what other people might say to Zion was on the Miseducation. But now the Miseducation was, you know, in its was dropping and picking up and doing what it was doing, and she was pregnant again, so people was talking, you know. So we talked like she missed. She was cast in Oprah's film adaptation of Toni Morrison's Beloved. She was cast in that, but she had to sit that opportunity out. And we also discussed, I totally forgot about this. A lot of things I'd forgotten about, so it was really pleasant for me to listen to, too. But she discussed some advice that Nina Simone had given her about being a mother in the music industry. And she does a really nice Nina impression, so you should definitely listen for that. We discussed her relationship with other women in the business, like Mary J. Blige and Erykah Badu. We talk about some really 90s topics, like Monica Lewinsky and David Koresh. And one thing that I've kind of forgotten about this too, but we really came together on our shared love for singer Linda Jones. Now, if you know me well or anything, you know that Linda Jones is one of my favorite singers. You know, unfortunately, she passed away very young, but in terms of raw soul, I mean, she was one of the most soulful that ever did it. And I'll post a couple of my favorite tracks on the Craig's Pop Life website, but Laura knew about Linda Jones. Linda Jones also from Jersey, so that was that connection. But it's rare you run up across somebody that really is deep with Linda Jones. So anyway, and one question I've forgotten that kind of made me laugh that I've forgotten I asked her in light of her lyrics on Doo Wop That Thing was whether or not she'd ever had a weave. So you'll have to listen to see what she says. Now, one last thing. I just want you to realize that this is a tape that was left unprotected in a box for 2 decades. So the sound quality at some points is very, very low, especially toward the end. I had a sound engineer actually work on the tape. That was some of the delays since the picture and me putting it out because I wanted it to at least get the best as possible. And, you know, this was recorded over a telephone, old school, what do you call it? Like a corded telephone and with a tape recorder from Radio Shack. So, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like, and it was for a print interview, so it wasn't like I was that pressed about the sound quality at the time. So anyway, there's about 3 to 5 minutes toward the end that are particularly hard to hear, but I think you'll still enjoy it. And without further ado, here is Ms. Lauryn Hill.
Hello, Craig.
Hey.
Great.
Lauren?
Yes.
Craig?
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Craig. Right. How you doing?
I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm reading this. I'm being extorted by a friend of mine who wants me to do something, and he has a lot of old, old blackmail material on me.
Uh-oh.
So he's putting that up for...
like dirt or like tracks or something?
He's got, like, early videotape performances and lots of stuff.
She's going to be on another edition of that VH1 before they were stars.
She has to reconsider doing it. Okay.
Right.
How's everything?
Pretty well. How are things with you?
Oh, I'm fat.
So you're just getting... So what do you do?
I'm due tomorrow.
Are you serious?
I'm excited.
Well, I'm going to make sure to make this real...
I'm due tomorrow at 4 o'clock, but my due date is November 16th. However, everyone looking at me thinks that I'll be going.
That you're about to go. Well, I'm going to try to make this real non-stressful then. Although that would be a nice cap for the interview, but anyway. So tell me.
It was the labor after.
Right. But then I wouldn't be able to do any follow-up questions then.
So
tell me, how is this phenomenal success? I mean, how does it feel?
You want to know about how swollen my ankles are? Because that's what I'm feeling right now. Isn't that crazy?
Mm.
Let me tell you, God is really, he has a... we have a real, he has a sense of humor with me.
Uh-huh.
Every time something real big happens in my career, he puts me in like my most humble, position he possibly can. Like fat and waddling. So it's not like I'm out at a party, soaking it all up, holding my feet up, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, it's amazing. It's beautiful. It feels very good to know that I didn't have to compromise myself,
mm-hmm.
and that people are supporting it and are continuing to support it, and that you know that they relate to something that felt so strongly about.
Okay.
I think my nervousness, the anxiety that I had to release this album to do with thinking that right now, hip-hop, R&B music, black music as we know it right now, wasn't as personal and as intimate as the music that I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was very braggadocious and real cool, and, you know, we talk more about what it is that we wanted to be as opposed to, you know, what we were or who we were.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make an album that was really, really personal, and I thought that people, you know, weren't going to be able to relate or that I was a Martian. I really did. I really was like, wow, okay. So, you know, I put this album out, and to know that people have responded in such a way, it shows me two things. One being that, you know, that they're very ready, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
for real music and for truth in music and real experience and music that touches a lot more deep, you know, that goes deeper than the surface.
Right.
But, and also that I wasn't as much of a Martian, much of a Martian as I thought I was. And there are people who feel and think and experience as I do. So, you know, it was cool. It just was heavy.
So explain to me a little bit about what this nervousness was like. I mean,
it was I'll give an example.
Mm-hmm.
It was like me playing a song for my mom, you know, and my mother, going, I feel that line. And me going, yeah, but, you know, I grew up on your records, so of course you would feel it, you know what I mean? But our kids, you know, our 14-year-old, 13-year-old, 17-year-old, and people who, you know, who are remotely a part of this generation,
mm-hmm.
they're going to feel that same passion. Because I was one of those weird kids. I listened to a lot of older music growing up, you know what I mean? And not older like mature music, but just older as
right.
like 20 years prior to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of music, and I was really, really into it from a very young age. You know, I think a lot of people discovered a lot of music in high school and college.
Right.
But this was stuff that I was raised on from the time I was 7 years old. So it had a lot to do with shaping my musical direction and also my musical expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to hear more. You know, I wanted real sound, live instruments, and a real lyricism and real storytelling. And at that particular, earlier in my career, the only place that I was finding anything remotely close to that was in, like, the hip-hop, the rap world.
Right.
You know? So I kind of removed myself from the R&B arena, you know, even though I sang, it's because I was disillusioned with the way it had gone
mm-hmm.
for some period of time. You know? But after the Fugees, and after there were people who were listening to me rhyme and also listening to me sing, I figured that perhaps there was an audience
mm-hmm.
who would be able to stomach, you know what I mean, some of what I was talking about.
Right. So what means more to you now, the critical, you know, acclaim of the album or the sales success or just...
Critical acclaim is wonderful. You know, the fact that it's selling is wonderful. But there's no response like the response you get from people.
Okay.
The critical acclaim is like, it can almost even be speculation before something is released.
Mm-hmm.
But the people, they confirm it. You know what I mean? They really confirm it. They confirm that, you know, that you're not out of touch, for example.
Right.
You know, I think any artist, or at least my desire, is to always, is to be able to reach, you know what I mean, and captivate and inspire and move the people. You know what I mean? And the thing is, you can really easily get caught up just reading your press and that holds you over, but I don't think it really would really drive its way home if it wouldn't really sustain me if I didn't hear that there were people who were touched by this music, people outside of the music industry
mm-hmm.
also. Because sometimes, you know, in the music industry, we can have sort of weird standards,
mm-hmm.
and standards that are a little more intellectual or a little heavier,
mm-hmm.
and I've always been somebody who's tried to sort of, you know, deal with the groove and with the thought process.
Okay.
You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's certain music that's not really intellectual music, and some people may not appreciate it, but it's music that has a groove, no doubt, and it's successful because there are people who deal with the groove to it.
Right.
And then there's music that's really thinking people's music.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even music that can be a little bit pretentious because people may not even be able to relate to it.
Right.
It may be deep, that critically you just have to respect it for what it is, the thought process. But I've always wanted to really reach the people and have a groove and respond to a groove and have them respond to this groove, but also make them think at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like preaching to the choir, you know what I mean? You kind of have to go outside the church doors.
Right.
Drive the message home.
So if you had a moment where you, you know, seen, I don't know, heard doo-wop playing out of the somebody's window and they were singing too.
That is very funny. And it's always like the people who, I love it when it's just people. You know what I mean? When it's people, you can be driving a Gremlin. You don't have to be in like a Bentley.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can be in a Gremlin or a Chevette and just be pumping it. That's what it just feels good. Also, I did some in-stores when the album was released.
Mm-hmm.
Like a week, maybe the week the album was released. And the way that people were responding, the things that they were saying to me, it was quite different from anything that I'd ever encountered. You know, we had the Fuji success. There were people who would come up and be like, hey, you know, Lauren, I love such and such. I love the way you rhymed on X, Y, and Z. But this was different because people were really like, wow, this song mirrored my life exactly. And
okay,
I was like, hey.
So how was that different from like what you experienced with the score and stuff?
A lot more poignant, you know what I mean? And a little heavier, you know what I mean? A little, you know, I would have little girls coming up to me and went to school and like, I love you more than I love my father.
What?
You know, and they'd be like, oh my God, where did you know your hair? How are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
With this, you know, these are people who really wanted to talk to me about things that I had gone through.
Okay.
Women who were having young children, you know, who were having children. People talking about relationships. People talking about their relationship with God. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A lot more. They had a lot to do with self-exploration and salvation and redemption and you know, everything that I had gone through, I just knew that it wasn't me alone. We have a tendency to experience things and then think that we're the only ones in this whatever predicament,
right,
in whatever situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was therapeutic for both me as the music maker and them as the listener,
mm-hmm,
to know that, oh my God, that's a song that embodies what I went through. And for me to know that people were going, oh my God, that's a song that embodies what I went through.
Right. So in one interview, you say that you wanted your music to empower, to inform, and to inspire. Now, I know you wanted your music to reach as many people as possible, but is there, you know, a certain group of people that you would have been really disappointed if your songs hadn't touched? Do you know what I mean?
I think I definitely, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, hip-hop is the voice of urban culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you always want to reach that audience. You know what I mean? I think there are a few people in hip-hop who would tell you that they didn't want to reach, you know, those people who embodied them in the beginnings and, you know, and the people that you grew up around.
Right.
You know? I mean, I think it would be strange for me as a black woman to make a record about my experiences and then have black women hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd be like, okay, all right. You know, I probably feel a little strange, you know. So to know that that there are young women, you know, who can relate.
Right.
But I definitely think that the world is a lot smaller than I probably thought growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I ended up realizing, particularly with the success of the school and with this album, that, you know, our issues may not have the same face, but the insides are the same. The material on the inside may be very, very similar.
Okay.
You know, so it's interesting that all different types of people, because I haven't really gotten one demographic, you know, telling me that they appreciate this record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had Italian cops in Port Authority. You know what I mean? I love the record. Is that your little boy? You know?
Right.
And so, it's really heavy.
Well, so do you think that you have a specific message to, like, young sisters that's different than the message you have for brothers? Or, like, you know what I mean?
I think, you know what? I don't try to discriminate with the message. You know,
okay.
What I mean? The message is what it is. And I sort of don't want to, you know, I think sometimes my music can be so literal, I would hate to dictate it. Hammer it into somebody's head. You know, if you respond to this, if you take something out of this, and that was, it is what it is.
Okay.
You know, I don't think I'm doing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just rather write my experience, and then whoever it touches, it touches.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you said in an interview once was that, you know, once you stand for something, that you face opposition. And then there was something in the new Rolling Stone that, you know, called the album beautiful but preachy. What do you think of that criticism?
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, with any successful thing, there's a period of time where, you know, whoever doesn't get to be the first person to applaud it will be the first person to criticize it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's just, that's just the world.
Right.
Okay, so you have to, you know, you'll wait for that. But also, I think that the music is very inspirational, and it's also like devotional music. It doesn't, I'm not embarrassed to mention God in song. Some people find that corny. Some people find that even offensive. It's always funny to me to hear people talk about, you know, things being puritanical or too goody-goody. Because there's so much baddie-baddie.
Right.
It's like, this is just one woman's story, you know.
Okay.
It's not me trying to, because I can never judge anybody. But having gone through things myself, I put the story out there so I can hopefully help someone else to avoid some trap that I may have fallen into. But when you stand in a position, when you choose a side, there are a lot of different things that you can do. You can always ride the middle. But the middle's not a good place, because there was a war in heaven in the Bible. And there were angels who fought for God, and there were angels who fought for the devil, and there were angels who just out of it. And once, you know, Satan was cast into the fiery pit, all of his angels were sent, that fought for him were sent down there too. And but also, so were the people who stayed out. You know what I mean? Because the difference is like, you know, bad.
Right.
So, you know, if I choose a position and I choose to want to inspire folks and you know, let them know how beautiful they are, I'm sure that there are people who, you know, would not have that message be released. You know, who don't think that's very exciting, or does their business very much good. You know, so may have something negative to say about it. You know, also when you raise the bar, raise the standard, you know, it's kind of messing with people's money.
Right.
You know, so people sort of, you know, they can very easily start to get mad at you.
Well, as far as the preachiness criticism, you know, that's do you feel that's primarily coming from the media, or do you actually hear that from people on the street?
I hear that from the media.
Okay, so do you think, going back to what you said about, you know, how the media can like a lot of sort of intellectual type stuff, and, you know, there's sort of a difference between the expectations of the media and the expectations of just the person on the street?
Oh, most definitely, because the media is looking with, first of all, they're looking for something to criticize. You know, they're looking with some sort of scope or some magnifying glass, that, you know what I mean? They're really, as opposed to responding to the spirit.
Right.
I think people, you know, they respond to what makes them feel good. Whereas the media, you know what I mean, it's sort of their job to kind of really scrutinize and find out, look at all the holes in the boat and the defects, as well as, you know, what's right with the boat, but as well as what's wrong.
Do you think, I mean, do you find that kind of analysis instructive at all? I mean, as an artist, you know, knowing how much care you put into your work and that, you know.
I think analysis is cool, but I really respond to inspiration.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, if I'm inspired to say something, then I'm inspired to say it. And if I, you know, I'm not one of those people who sort of sits down and really forces to try and come up with something. You know
right.
I mean? Like, I'll pick up a guitar and strum some chords, and lyrically, you know, I'm usually inspired to write and say certain things, particularly with this album. You know, this was all inspiration. I had very little to do with it. You know, these are things that I think it was obviously meant for me to say, because I could have made an album saying anything.
Right.
But this is what came.
And the reason I bring up the thing about... I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't have, like, a personal agenda.
Oh, no, I understand.
Run for office.
Right.
So...
is in your campaign speech, right? Well, because one thing I was wondering about that whole, you know, the difference between what the media makes of things and what people on the street makes of things. Because I'm down in South Carolina right now,
okay.
And there's this beauty salon called the Diva Hair Weaver.
Okay.
So I was walking up by there, and I said, well, let me just run in here since I'm working on this piece.
They got mad at me, didn't they?
And see what they think about Lauryn Hill. So, you know, I go in there, and it's like 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. All the chairs are full. Everybody's getting their hair weaved. And so I was like, you know, so we started talking about you and your music and stuff, and I said, you know, does anybody bother by the line of doo-wop? You know, hair weaves like Europeans, fake dance like Koreans. And nobody in there thought that you were talking about them. So, of course, you know, that begs the question. I mean, who are you talking about in that line? Are you talking about them?
That's funny. Yeah, that's my people.
I mean, so who is the target of that line? You know what I'm saying?
I think it's more of a mind thing. I don't even think it's a specific sister. I think it's a mind thing. Because, you know, I'm not saying that women can't straighten their hair, because we can do it. There's versatility. Versatility is beautiful.
Right.
But it's the mind thing that's all you can do. And anything contrary to that is ugly or hideous.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's a self-loathing type of attitude that I'm sort of, you know, talking about.
Okay.
You know, the fact that we should love ourselves, period. You know what I mean? But not because we put on cosmetic, you know what I mean, all of that which is cosmetic, and that makes us beautiful, you know. So it's not necessarily you over there with the hair weave. You know what I'm saying?
So
it's
you're saying
that.
Okay, so let me get this correct, because you know there's a big issue, and there's like a lot of people who talked about it. I mean, so you're saying it's not really the hair weave itself that is the problem.
It's the thinking.
Yes, okay.
That's what is thinking behind the hair weave. Because I know these, I mean, I grew up with these girls.
Mm-hmm.
These are the girls who, oh my God, I can't go nowhere without my nails done.
Okay.
Oh my God. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. It has nothing to do with, you know, it's not the woman itself. It's what is in the woman's head.
Okay.
You know, and there can be many different reasons as to why that woman doesn't think that she's particularly beautiful, minus, you know, all the fixtures.
Well, I remember like one sister at the shop said to me that she just doesn't feel as pretty without a weave. And, you know, that was deep.
And that's unfortunate.
Know?
You know,
right.
She's probably beautiful, but probably nobody's ever told her.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And there are a bunch of reasons. I mean, you know, I mean, going right back to, you know, media images of what a beautiful woman is supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. As a young black woman, I grew up never thinking that a white woman could get a weave. It wasn't until later that I learned that Dolly Parton,
mm-hmm,
and all these people wore weaves. Like, I always thought that the white hair type always grew to, like, the middle of the back, and sisters would just, hey. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I never knew how cosmetics really were.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just something that we're afflicted by. Everybody, I just don't feel beautiful with my form.
So what is, okay, so what does Lauryn Hill think the problem? The problem, you're really just ultimately trying to say that you just need to feel beautiful with who you
maybe think.
Okay.
And understand that your importance, your significance has a lot more to do than what is on the outside. Most of those women who weave it up and nail it are the type of girls who are crediting their beauty to how men particularly or people respond to them. You know what I mean? Like when I was 14 years old, okay, it was very important that when I walked down the street that if guys didn't look like, I would actually look back, turn around and look back and see if a brother was following me with his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just didn't feel pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And then I grew up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I felt attractive regardless. And I was confident enough to believe in who I was. And I knew I had more than just what he was saying, sneakers and tennis shoes and all.
Okay.
You understand what I mean? But there are a lot of young women who are still trapped in that if I'm not turning heads, if he's not screaming, you know, and maybe even pawing on me,
mm-hmm,
then I'm just not pretty. And I'm just not. And if I'm not pretty, then I'm not significant.
Okay.
And that's a huge misconception. That my value is based, you know, directly on how I look.
Well, you know, it's clear you've talked about, you know, how much you're influenced by the music of the 70s and stuff like that, right?
60s, I would say. Yes, my mother graduated high school. Can I say that, Ma? She said no. I can't.
Well, so we're talking about 60s and 70s, right? Because what I'm thinking is that a lot of that music is coming out of the whole, you know, the Black is Beautiful movement, you know, and that
was my parents, the age that I am now, that's how old they were, and that whole, so I was raised with a lot of that.
And that dialogue just does not exist right now, do you know what I mean? And so do you feel like...
But it doesn't mean that it's not significant.
Oh, of course, well, that's what I'm saying,
so
do you feel like...
I'm kind of that chick that, you know, sort of likes to bring back into the agenda.
Okay.
They're a little less popular.
Mm-hmm.
But are still important.
Okay. So that would be...
Oh, yeah. Trust me, starving babies in Africa aren't even on the agenda right now.
Right, yeah.
Nothing except ourselves. It's very, very... to me, right now reminds me, if I could parallel this time with any other time, it would remind me of the later 70s, of disco, Watergate. You know what I mean? It's like that era. And it usually goes hand in hand with economic stability.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like when people are a little more struggling, people are a little more aware, and a little more hungry, a little more angry, and they want to talk about issues.
Right.
But, you know, I guess, Clinton has done something. But when there's a little more economic stability, people are very, you know, well, my Gucci, my this, that, my...
Well, what do you think of the whole, what's going on with Clinton and everything?
Clinton? I haven't made some things about Bill Clinton.
But don't try to clam up on me now. I'm not asking political questions.
There's a lot more pressing issues, you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like a comedy.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's like a circus. That's not, if you people, to me that's, as a matter of fact, that's kind of almost, isn't that weird? You go, let's talk about politics. So what do you think about Clinton and Monica Lewinsky?
Right.
Politics.
Okay, I see what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not political. That's sexual. That's tabloidy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You want to say, let's talk like the star. And I'm like,
and you should know better than anybody. That's what people want to talk about, right? Not the issue with the sex life and all that kind of stuff.
Sensational.
Well, another thing that you said in the article, he said, I always wanted to be perceived as a mother of someone, a mother of a nation, a mother of people, a mother of love. I wonder if you could get a little bit more into that and explain what you meant by that.
You know, it's so funny with the motherhood metaphors. Are you a parent?
No, I'm not.
So you become a parent, it is so hard to be so literal. Because I've heard people like those people who want to criticize, like I've heard them say negative things about that song, about the song My House, About My Son.
Right.
Stuff like, and it's just so mushy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell right from the door that they don't have any children because,
right,
you know, it's a one woman song about her child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like if anything to criticize, you know, it's like, you know, no one, you can never really truly explain or articulate how you feel personally about your baby. You know, it is the most incredible. It's a huge endeavor, and as I'm about to do it the second time,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and everything is a stage, but when I spoke about being the mother of a nation, the mother of love, I think I was talking about the fact that from a time I was young, I've always had the desire to nurture.
Okay.
And to want to nurture. And not be afraid of that nurturing side of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have to be the vixen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be like, you know, 100 pounds, you know, making pancakes either. But you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a nurturing spirit. It's a spirit where I feel like I am responsible, you know, for a generation.
Okay, now you have this big thing against this kind of matrix, you just brought up against this kind of matrixly image.
Because, you know why? Because,
why?
Damn it, I'm 23 years old, and I'm young, and I have children, and that's all good. You know what I mean? For a man is still blazing. He can have, like, 20 kids, and he's still like, yo, I'm checking for you. But women get this sort of, like, turned up eye, you know, and I really, you know, wanted my fans and the audience to know that ain't nothing, there's nothing changed about me. Yeah.
Well, what exactly are you saying, Laura? Are you saying that you still want people to find you attractive, and you think that if they perceived you as kind of a matronly, that they would find you attractive, or, you see what I'm saying?
I think it's a little bit of that, too.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's probably a little bit of wanting to still be considered attractive, but not just attractive. Hard road for females. When I talk to the older women,
mm-hmm.
I had a conversation with Nina Simone,
mm-hmm.
and she said to me, Lauren, she said, I don't think that a woman can have a family and be in the music business.
But she had a daughter.
Yes, she did.
But she didn't raise her daughter or something like that?
No, I think she did, but she still said that to me.
Okay.
Perhaps, you know, in her mind, she's thinking, you know, I deserve to have been a bigger artist. More people to know who I was. You know, perhaps. Maybe that's what she meant. I don't know exactly. But it was a heavy thing, you know, because I was like, wow, you know, why should I stop? You know, because I have a child. My mother, you know, had a 25-year career, you know, after we were born. Wow, I just put some years on her life. She's going to give me for that. I don't know if that's the exact amount of years. But whatever it is.
Right. Photograph when you're pregnant, is that what that's coming out of as well?
I just, you know what, I don't want people to, images have a very lasting, powerful, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They can be very lasting, very powerful, and I didn't want my fans to, you know, have images of me, as a pregnant woman, not because I didn't think I was beautiful, just because I didn't want them, especially with the first pregnancy, to confuse the music with the whole sensational, you understand, the sensationalism of me being pregnant. You know, I wanted them to listen.
Well, explain that a little bit more to me.
Okay.
You kind of lost me.
I'll give an example.
Okay.
It's almost like, when I first found out I was pregnant, I was finishing the album.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That, you mean for the second time?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, considering all the sensationalism that surrounded the first pregnancy,
right.
I didn't want my music to be confused by the fact that she's pregnant again. You know what I'm saying? I wanted people to listen and to digest the album without necessarily, you know, making such a disco over my private life as I've, you know, they had a tendency, you know, as they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really where that comes from.
Okay.
Because, I still feel attractive all 40 pounds on my head. But, you know, and also, you know, it's a personal time.
Okay.
It's a very personal time for me. It's a time where I'm like very much with my family, very much with my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So it's just, you weren't, that's not part of the publicity. That's not one thing you're willing to sell.
It's sort of just not like, I didn't feel the necessity.
But that is one thing, because what I tried to do, you know, since it's the urine issue, I tried to talk to his...
Poop you want to come with a big bag? Is that what you're asking?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Listen to me. What I'm saying is I just tried to talk to as many people as possible. Just as, you know, if we're closing the year, what is the, you know, very question you want to ask Lauryn Hill, you know, to put all these issues to rest? Because, you know, people talk. And a lot of people...
You know, people talk.
They do. You know, on these little radio shows
that's
and what have
question.
You.
Why was I taking all these pictures?
Well, it's just saying, you know, well, if she wants to be, you know, if she's supposed to be the mother of this and that, why won't she be photographed pregnant? You know, that's
but a... I got personal photos.
No.
I have a whole gang of them.
You're just saying it's not for us.
It's just, you know, it's a private thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why am I not selling tickets to the... You know what I'm saying?
Or live on the internet, right?
And it's no disrespect, because as soon as I have this child, I'll be on the road and you know, and performing and giving it my all. But this is, you know, being pregnant, and I don't know, it's a personal moment, man.
Okay.
You know, I was on the road for about 7 or 8 months last pregnancy.
Okay.
Huge. The audience would be like, oh, ah, each time I would move. You know, so it's definitely not that I don't have a love for my audience, but I have a love for my family. And like,
mm-hmm.
This is a very intimate, personal, private moment.
So it's not like just a vanity thing or anything
no,
like that?
No, it's not like...
Okay.
You want to know something? If that was the case, I actually would take pictures because they're very beautiful pictures.
Okay.
Because I'm, you know, I didn't gain a huge amount of weight. It's just this big belly. This is beautiful pieces of art. You know, and maybe later on, maybe I'll release some photos.
Mm-hmm.
On the album cover. But it's not a thing.
Okay.
If it were a vanity thing, then I wouldn't be photographed, period.
Okay.
Yeah.
show you were pregnant, right? What that just came on review or something like that?
Review, yes.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some other things that people want to know, okay? Just to put this to rest, don't put this off on me. I've talked to a lot of people about this. It's not just my own curiosity. But a lot of people, you know, it's been all this stuff about, well, who's Lauren have beef with? Because there are all these songs that are obviously pointed at certain people, you know? And I think you've been through the Clef and Praz thing to death, so I don't feel any need to ask you about that. But what is all this stuff? Some people think that you have something with Missy.
No, I don't. I don't even know Missy like that.
Okay.
Why do people think I have beef with Missy?
I didn't ask the people why. I just said, well, no, they just thought that some, you know, that she was one of the people you may have been speaking about in Superstar or in Lost One or something like that.
I don't know Missy like that at all.
Okay.
You know, we actually might be collaborating on something. The last I heard, I don't know. But I actually, do you want to know something?
What?
I don't really have beef with nobody yet.
Okay. Personally.
Yeah, I don't hang out, you know what I mean? So anybody who would even think that I would have beef, they probably don't even know me. You know, and I can never have beef with somebody that I don't know. You know, because if I was somebody puts on a record, you know what I mean? If you don't know me or I don't know you, it kind of makes it hard. You
okay.
know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
For anybody to pass judgment on, you know, who you are as a person. But I don't have beef with anyone.
Well, what was this deal with Erykah Badu? Was she invited to the Rose is Still a Rose video shoot?
Yeah, she was.
Okay. Okay. So all this stuff about, well, she wanted to be paid and you didn't want to pay her and...
No, you know what it was? Actually, if anything, I was being greedy because she was very pregnant and I was begging her to come because I really wanted her to be a part of the video. And she, you know, she was very pregnant. Matter of fact, she had her baby like a week after, so I actually felt bad.
Okay.
Because I was like, come on, Erykah, you can make it. You know what I mean? But she had a baby like a week.
So do you want to unequivocally just put it to rest? You are not talking about her. You're not talking about Missy in either of those songs.
Are you serious? People think that?
People really think that. And I've heard, somebody said that, see, this is how rumors get started, but somebody said you had talked about it on the radio in D.C. That's where I'm from D.C.
Oh.
That you had talked about it on the radio in D.C. with Donnie Simpson.
On the radio with D.C. No, I don't. Never. Never.
See, that's why I ask.
No.
Okay, well, that is good.
To be honest with you,
significant. with your tossed salad, that was perhaps homophobic, that you were trying to say something about gay people on that.
No, it wasn't homophobic at all.
Okay, what does the line, can you explain the line, or?
Like, you're looking for dressing to go with your tossed salad, is about the flossy cat.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's get into the production a little bit. By the way, I was speaking with Drew Dixon before you called, and she wanted me to tell you hi.
Okay, I just was speaking to her earlier.
Yeah, that's what she was saying. Tell me a little bit about, what was your production role on the Fugees? Like, what did you do with the Fugees, production-wise?
Came up with ideas to start things through.
Okay.
It depends. With the Fugees, it was more of a, as far as production, I would say it had a lot to do with myself, Wyclef, and Jerry Wonder, T-Boss. He was sort of the unit that sort of held it down in the studio constantly.
Mm-hmm.
With the Fugees, we dealt with more with samples, so perhaps I bring a record in.
Okay. Okay.
Play a couple bass lines. But with this, with the dedication, it was different from that in that, I didn't have Jerry or Wyclef there. You know, so I was able to, every thought, every idea, that I wanted to put down, I was able to put down. And it wasn't by committee.
Right.
You know?
Did you have to fight in order to get that?
But if I didn't necessarily, I just kind of went to the studio and did it.
Okay. I talked to a bunch of people. I mean, I think that you've really just exploded as a producer this year, with your Read the Record, with your own record. I just heard that joint you did for Andrew Martin, which is hot.
Thank you. That's actually old, too.
Yeah, that's what she said. I know. I was like, and then she said, well, I was 9 months old. What do you think about the possibilities for black women in production in R&B and in hip-hop? Based upon the climate of R&B and hip-hop, I mean, is that an easy thing to do? Is that hard?
No, I don't really think about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If there's an opportunity for me to do a song, I do a song. I don't really respond to sort of like the obstacles of anything anymore because you do have people like Jesse. You know what I mean? And doing production. And you have people like Patrice Rushen back in the day.
Yeah, right.
That's a little too much, you know what I mean? Perhaps. But, every producer, every writer, everybody.
Okay.
I don't get so upset or sensitive anymore. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've primarily produced women. Do you think it would be different producing a man in the studio?
Nah, not at all.
Really? Okay, so your implants have your own label and everything?
I actually do have my own label. I have a label.
What's the name of it?
I can't say that.
Okay. What you just said, you had to remember. Well, that's interesting, because one thing you said is you said that men need to be in a position to hurt in a relationship. Okay. So then that, what do you have to sing of what's the next album would be?
Maybe I'll just think about love. I don't know. I have issues for sure.
You know, another thing that really struck me is that, and this is a lot, you know, like you said, a lot of people thought that the song design was very mushy-mushy, you know. And what I've always said to people is that, you know, after all the flack that she went through when she was pregnant, you know, and all the people saying this and that, I mean, I think that she'd have the right to sing whatever she wanted to, you know what I mean? All that. And I find it interesting at this moment, you know, you followed your heart, did what you had to do, and one of the most publicized things that you didn't get to do because you were pregnant was Beloved. Okay. And now you have that movie's out, and that's getting its acclaim. Okay. But at the same time, your album's at the top of the charts, and I just think that's a wonderful lesson.
Primarily not a woman's world, so
Okay. Now you seem to get really upset when I, you know, when it seemed like I was misinterpreting the album to mean that. So let's just be very clear. What do you think? What message do you want? Has your son taught you about music?
Put all equipment up high. Out of his reach. That is the lesson I'm learning right now. How's that? Is that good enough for you? No, my son gave me a confidence I didn't have before. He's a confidence in making music.
Okay.
A confidence that might have said, oh gosh, I've been part of a crew for so long. What's it gonna be like out there on my own? You know, when I had my son, it was like, what? Girl, this is music. You know?
One thing I've thought about the album, it does have sort of a sing-song quality. I mean, because I kind of take care of my little brother, and it's like the one hip-hop R&B album that I can actually play with him in the car. First time he heard Doo-Wop, he was singing them. Like, he was singing them that night. You know, and I just...
What you're saying, sing-songy minus the profanity.
Well, what I'm trying to say is just that, you know, and I've talked to other people with children, other people who take care of children, and that they talk about that their kids really sing your song. I mean,
oh,
that they immediately connect.
You on my hook, huh?
I am not trying to sing it. Why are you being defensive about this? Why can't you just... take the compliment as it comes.
Uh-huh. Funny. What if Zion was up there like, okay, Ma. Hold on. Yeah, it probably happens like that sometimes.
Do you sing to your son? Of course you do, right?
But listen, I sing any song and it'll make him sleep. See, I don't
What is this? It's just you didn't listen. So I was trying to give you a compliment about your music, and you didn't want to hear that. So. Is there anything else you want to add? Wonderful. Well, I thank you very, very much.
Let's go back to that tour.
All right. And, you know, I hope you have a blessed delivery and everything. Hope you make it to your movie.
Can I say something? Do you know that people will see something like or this album was done, and they go, yeah, I saw it, especially black people.
That's a Jersey girl, so you have to do something with that.
But what, matter of fact,
do her life story or something.
So I hope you all enjoyed the interview. I certainly enjoyed bringing it to you. And if you'd like the podcast, please rate it on the iTunes. Please share it with a friend. And don't forget to check out Linda Jones on my website, because I love her and I want her name, to stay relevant out there in these streets. So until next time, be cool, be kind, be creative. And in the words of my fave,
be your damn self.
All right. Check with y'all next time. Love y'all. Bye.